From VinePair's New York City headquarters, I'm Adam Teeter.
And I'm Joanna Chirino.
And in Seattle, Washington, I'm Zach Jabal.
And this is the VinePair podcast. Wow. Just, you know, we're back in the studio together, Joanna. Feels right. Zach's where he's supposed to be as well, in Seattle.
Far away.
I thought you were going to say in his basement.
Well, that is where he is, right? Zach, you do record in the basement, right?
I am in the
What's
basement.
What's the basement look like?
It's like his wine cellar,
No, but
right?
I like imagine it's like being like just an homage to his wine collection. Like, it's just like you walk down, it's like you're in the cellar of a winery. Is that what it's
oh,
like?
No.
I think it's like a 70s basement.
It is.
With, like,
it is something.
Wood paneling. Like,
yeah. Joanna pays more attention on the rare occasions she gets visual in here.
Everybody in Seattle has a basement, yeah?
No, it's actually very, it's relatively uncommon here.
I thought it's common in Portland,
because of,
right?
Flooding?
Mix of flooding and just a lot. It's very common, it's relatively common in houses of this age, which is like over 100 years old, because that's just what people did back then. But like new construction, and I mean, by new, I mean like anything built after like 1950, almost never. It's a combination of flooding and also just the hilliness and seismic uncertainty. People just tended to not want to do that, even though I tend to think that basements are actually better for in cases of earthquakes, but whatever. I'm not a
seismologist.
That's
what you have to tell yourself.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought that, I guess maybe just Portland, like that basements were a thing, because that was a whole thing about like why so many bands came out of Portland for a while, because they all had basements and it was like really depressing half the year, so they would just play music together in the basement. And
that's funny.
I think you find basements much more often in flat places. It's much easier to do because, like, so much of Seattle is hilly, and so a basement doesn't really work in the same way because of water and because of just erosion. But where we are is semi-flat, so it seems to be working fine.
Right.
I'm not eroding as we speak, I don't think.
And that's our episode for you today,
yeah.
Folks.
Yeah. So what have you guys been reading?
I'm going to go first. I really love Jake Emmons' piece on the site this week about the Marvel-esque expansion of bar groups. He very cleverly calls it the MCU, Modern Cocktail Universe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this idea that even though franchises sell and it seems like a no-brainer business decision, it's actually a lot harder and more challenging than you might assume, and that these localized concepts don't necessarily replicate that easily into other markets. So, I really like that piece. I thought it was fun and really smart.
I got a lot of emails about that piece, actually, from bartenders who were like, this is one of the best pieces that I've read in a long time.
Oh, that's so nice. Where are my emails complimenting our articles?
I don't know. Email Joanna, guys.
I'm glad to hear that. What about you, Zach?
Well, mine was actually also related to the kind of modern cocktail landscape, but it was Robert Simonson's piece about how it actually also with movie reference involved. So there you go. We had his piece about how kind of modern cocktail bars are now almost across the board trying to be everything to everyone. Sort of evolution or real kind of change in the way cocktail bars have approached things in the past, where they tended to be much more focused on either a specific spirit or a type of drink or category or just sort of vibe. And now there's a little bit more cocktail bars have to be everything. And, you know, it's really interesting to read. I think this is something that crystallizes a little bit what we've been talking about on the pod in certain ways, in terms of how, you know, so much of the seeming movement in cocktail bars and sort of the cocktail trend is towards experience more than a sort of fidelity to an individual kind of cocktail or spirit or whatever.
Concept. Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think it's interesting to read this because I think about sometimes how, in what, you know, kind of Robert talks about his own experience. And I think we've all experienced in various ways when we're out drinking that I have to remind myself that as much as we might all enjoy and certain other people, certainly some of our audience might enjoy bars that do have a very clear vision and stick to it very clearly, that those models in the modern landscape are both often financially not viable and can be, if not alienating, at least a little bit off-putting to the average drinker, because they have such a high sort of bar to clear just to get the concept in a way. And, you know, a sort of a bar that evokes the, you know, drinking culture of a bygone place or just a different place is can be intimidating in a way that, like, some of the bars that are referenced in here, something like Dead Rabbit, is just like a fucking fun time. And like, yeah, you want to go have the like geeky cocktail moment, you can do that. But if you want to just like drink draft beer and have, you know, chips or something, like, you can do that too. And so many bars now, I think even ones that do offer elevated cocktail experiences, are realizing that they have to offer fun and enjoyment and accessibility to just about everyone. So really
interesting. And high volume, right?
And volume. Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Adam, how about you?
Well, Joanna took mine. Sorry. Thanks a lot. So I really liked that piece a lot. I also did like Roberts as well. I think, you know, Roberts is a testament to his editor, who did a really great job of editing. And thanks, Joanna. And then I enjoyed today's, you know, the Mount Rushmore series that David Thomas Tao has been doing for us. This on sort of like this, a bunch of whiskey luminaries talking about what they think they're their Mount Rushmore of rye would be, which is always fun, and people like to debate it. And then I, you know, just perusing the site this week, also, of course, like, loved we asked six bartenders what the most overrated bourbons are.
Aren't they just the same answers every year?
They are, except for one at the very last one, which was pretty surprising. This one bartender hates this bourbon so much, but you'll have to read the piece to see. Those are always fun, because it's always interesting to, again, you know, take the temperature of the trade to hear which liquids they love serving, which liquids they are kind of sick of serving and are sick of hearing people order, or, you know, think people should look for an alternative to. And it's a nice opportunity for us to, like, not just post our own opinions, but actually publish, you know, people actually work in the industry's opinions. So it's also a good reminder to those that reach out upset about these articles. Like, these aren't our opinions, folks. These are actually, like, people in the trade. So don't get angry at us.
And that particular one is very hard to compile, because a lot of people in the trade are reluctant to give answers when they're prompted to say something's overrated.
Right.
Right?
So basically, this week, I want to talk about something that I have been discussing with lots of people in the industry, and that is the idea that our comps in this industry are out of whack. And so what do I mean by that? So basically, what we're seeing across the board when it comes to the business of alcohol is lots of big companies saying that they are having lower sales than expected. They're cutting back budgets. They are, you know, starting to change their projections. And they're basically treating this year and last year like they were not great years. And so basically what is happening is we are seeing layoffs. We are seeing, brand budgets go down. And we are seeing this sort of doom and gloom get projected when it comes to the media, right? Mm-hmm. So lots of articles, especially if you read some of the industry publications, saying like, oh, you know, alcohol, people aren't drinking as much, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're having people who are starting to abstain, all this stuff. And I've been having a lot of conversations with people about this for the past few months in terms of like what's actually going on here. Because when you talk to most consumers and you talk to people in the trade, like, no one's really seeing a massive slowdown. Mm-hmm. No one's seeing like, you know, oh my God, everyone's abandoned. This is all doom and gloom. Like, no one wants to drink anymore. And what actually is happening, I think, is that this is all a reaction to the behavior correction post-COVID. And what I want to talk about today is how COVID basically has caused the industry to incorrectly think of what growth means. And now what is happening is the industry is having to correct what that growth means. So if we take a very big step back to pre-COVID, what happened was the industry started being told that there was this massive shutdown that was coming, right? So we have COVID, and so everyone reacted, right? So, you know, media had layoffs, you know, people are going to have to work from home, all this stuff happens. And the industry needed to comp what they thought was going to be the outlook for the next few years in a world in which we were going to completely shut down the economy. We were all going to go back to our homes. We were going to have very limited subway ridership. We were going to have very limited amount of people traveling, et cetera. Like, the industry basically was like, what could this look like? And the closest comp the industry had at that time was 2008 recession.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone in the industry started making projections. And those projections basically were that people were going to trade down, right? That people were going to, you know, limit their consumption because they were going to be, they were going to be very cost conscious because a lot of them might lose their jobs because we were basically going to have a recession caused by a pandemic. And that when they did drink, they were going to drink this low level of alcohol, right? The sub 15 alcohol, because we know that when people get depressed and there's a poor economic outlook, they do drink, but they don't drink the premium nice shit.
Right.
Right. And if you look at 2008, there are a few companies that had amazing 2008s. One of those companies, which she came on very early on. Stephanie Gallo came onto the podcast really early on in COVID and had said, like, Gallo had a great 2008, 2009, right? Like, they are a company that has, that owns across the spectrum of wines. They have super, super luxury wines, and they go all the way down to your affordable wines. And their affordable wines did very well during the 2008 recession. So, like, they were kind of looking at this. A lot of people were. And I think there's this comment that, you know, another business leader that I respect has made before, Scott Galloway, who was a professor at NYU. He was my professor actually in business school. And now he has a very popular podcast called Pivot that some people who listen to this podcast might listen to as well. And also Prof G, where he said, like, if a bunch of economists are all saying the same thing, it probably is actually not accurate. Right. Because we have a bunch of economists that for the past 3 years have been predicting a recession that's never come.
Right.
Right. So the majority of economists, but it hasn't come. And, like, it's because, like, that's just kind of what happened. So every economist was predicting this. Everyone comped off this. Right. What happened instead? Well, no one predicted massive stimulus checks, which came. No one predicted that most people were going to be able to do their jobs, especially white collar people.
Sure.
That, like, the transition to working from home actually wasn't going to be that bad, and that industry wasn't going to be affected that much, right? That we were going to, that Zoom was going to be so advanced that we were going to be able to basically do our jobs, et cetera. And so we all still made our salaries. And so what people did with those salaries is go out and buy really nice shit. They bought really nice furniture. They bought really nice backyard stuff. They bought really nice food, and they bought really nice alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And what wound up happening is that a lot of the companies were, the alcohol companies, especially the ones that were public, were rewarded for just what the fuck happened. Like, they were geniuses, right? The street rewarded them. Their stock prices went up. And a lot of people, if you now look at, like, senior leadership in a lot of these companies, were rewarded as if they had something to do with this.
Like, it was a strategy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of people who now sit in the C-suites who basically happened to be in the right place at the right time during COVID.
Yeah.
And now what's happened is actually we are seeing that, like, COVID was what we all should have known and been smart about, not fucking normal.
Yeah.
And we are seeing a population go back to normal drinking behaviors, 2018 drinking behaviors, early 2019, but really 2018 drinking behaviors, right? Where the kind of consumption that was happening was average consumption. But especially the public companies now need to say something publicly because the street is punishing their stock prices. So therefore, they're having to say that we're having down years, we're course correcting, we're shifting marketing dollars, we're constricting, et cetera. We're not spending through this problem. And it's kind of panicking the whole industry. And what I believe is happening is that we actually are seeing these companies, you know, strategically do a very public reset where they're saying there's pain for the next 2 years. I think they'll pull back so that they can then go back to Wall Street and say now we're growing again, right? And their stock price can be rewarded. Because I think what a lot of people also don't realize is that for a lot of the public companies, like, their main goal is actually not the sales of their products. It's the increase of their stock price, right? Like, that's the value of these companies. And so they need to get their stock price to continue to increase. But unfortunately, because it's the biggest companies that are public that have to do this, it's actually still influencing all of the private companies because they're hearing all this and they're saying, well, shit, if, you know, the biggest companies at the top of the food chain that are public are, you know, pulling back marketing dollars or cutting budgets or doing this, then we should be too. So it's affecting the entire industry. And then we're seeing all of these now, you know, media companies write these articles about how alcohol's not in a great place right now, et cetera. When actually, again, I was talking to a strategist at one of the big companies. If you actually look at the data and the numbers, we've been these companies in comparison, not to COVID years, but to pre-COVID years, are having really good years.
Yeah.
Really good years. Even wine is having a pretty good time. Not as amazing as spirits, but like also not horrible. And I think that this is really important to remember and why I wanted to have this conversation today, because we have this 4-year time. We're right around the anniversary of
COVID,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. Where we did not behave normally.
Yeah.
But then we expected all of that non-normal behavior to be the new normal.
No, we based all of our goals and predictions off of that abnormal
tequila's
data.
Growth we've based off of that, fine wines growth, everything. And it's like we all need to snap out of it and admit that actually everyone's doing okay.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, say like there were restaurants that did very well in the like middle COVID period when people were finally ready to go outside. There were wine regions that were like, this is the new normal. Everyone's going to visit us from now on. No, it's because people were comfortable driving but not flying. Now you're seeing flights go up in price and more people flying because they can, and we're back to the new normal. We're like, yeah, in the summer, most people who live on the East Coast want to go to Europe,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't want to take a domestic American vacation. But they did during COVID because they felt safer doing that. Yeah.
Or they just could.
Or they could, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So all of this is this reset. And I think that, unfortunately, we have to remind ourselves that that's what's happening and that this isn't doom and gloom. Because there's so many people out there who are just saying everything is fucked. And it actually isn't. And if we don't snap out of it, I think we could find ourselves in a really bad place where we start making these really stupid decisions and these really drastic repositionings that don't need to happen just because we're trying to bring back a time that actually no one wants to come back, if we're being honest. I don't want COVID to come back, right?
No.
Even though there were some behaviors that benefited a lot of companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's obviously it's unreasonable. I mean, even us as a drinks publisher, right? Like COVID was a really good, great time for us. But if we tried to compare our readership and like numbers and traffic to that time, it's actually quite hard to do that because, like you said, behaviorally, we're kind of right setting now.
Right.
And or we have. And so it looks like a really, really rough comparison. But really, when you compare it to those years before, it's not so bad.
Okay. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. And I think that a big part of this, like there's sort of a broader conversation to have or like point to make about the way that, you know, the modern economic and sort of publicly traded company system works and how it is kind of in a lot of ways seemingly incapable of any level of nuance in the conversation about like, mm-hmm. well, why is it that your year over year comps look wonky? And it's like, well, yeah, it was a 4-year weird stretch where like 2 of those years were full on pandemic years. Another year was sort of quasi pandemic, and a lot of consumer behavior and business behavior and stuff like that was. And even then, I think it's almost like facile to say it's all just COVID, because as we were kind of mentioning in this, even the sort of COVID, heavily COVID affected period had different phases. In prepping for this, I went back and looked at and listened to a couple of episodes we did at various stages in 2020 and 2021. And it's like, there's the like early lockdown, holy shit, like people are buying whatever they can get their hands on and there's shortages and no one knows if like you're gonna be able to find like, you know, beer next week or whatever. And then there's the long period of like, we're all kind of, some places are more locked down. Other places are opening up. Some places you can dine outside. Some places you can't dine anywhere. And a long period of that kind of bumpiness, which is really hard to pin down, especially when your audience is, you know, a national or international audience. And you're kind of trying to figure out like different states and different, you know, countries have different rules and are affected differently by COVID. And then you have this long kind of tail period where life is sort of kind of like it was beforehand, but with still different priorities and things have changed. And it's, again, it's not necessarily going to blow any of the listeners' minds to be like, yeah, things are different than they were after COVID or before mm-hmm. COVID. But they're also, I think there's a way in which if you were to almost just be like, I don't know how you feel about this, Adam and Joanna, but I almost feel like if you're looking at making comparisons, I would just be like, how does 2024, like how did February of 2024 compare to like February of 2019?
Exactly.
Seems like almost a better comparison to make than even February of 2020, to say nothing of 21, 22, or 23. But that's that kind of cuts against the grain of everything that, of how these industries work, how these, especially publicly held companies, tend to work. They just can't, they're sort of not able to take that kind of stance.
You can't erase those years, right? No. Like financially, you can't go and be like, actually, only compare us to 2019.
Well, and remember, I think that was why I really wanted to bring up the promotions piece. A lot of executives now who are at the top of these companies receive promotions off of the COVID performance. Mm. So they now can't say, I benefited career-wise because of COVID.
Right, but...
Now, I'd like to be judged based on 2019 numbers.
Sure. Yeah,
so they're having to instead make these public corrections where they're acting like they're doing really important things by, you know, cutting back and limiting supply and blah, blah, blah. But also what actually happened, which no one is talking about, but is a pick up on Zach's point, is that in point number two, right, in the middle, he says there was these shortages. Well, what did everyone do? Oh, shit, everyone wants to buy really nice shit. Let's fucking produce. And so there's been a lot of oversupply. And, like, what also a lot of people aren't talking about externally, but I'm hearing a lot internally, is, like, a lot of retailers and restaurants just have a shit ton of product
so
still.
So much. Yep.
Like,
can't
a shit
move
ton.
It.
And now they're, like, now we're working through it because we bought at a much more extremely, you know, extreme active pace than we did when we normally would. Yeah. So now it's like, well, shit, now, like, I got too much tequila. Like, I don't need
to. And it looks bad, too.
I don't need to buy more tequila yet. I need to get through the tequila that I bought.
Yeah, and it looks like people aren't drinking.
But that's not true.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, too, to remember is in terms of the consumer behavior, most people, admittedly, were drinking every day. And what I mean, I'm saying drinking, because it wasn't like they were having a drink. They were drinking. Because that was the only thing to fucking do. And when they could go out to these outdoor eating establishments, they were drinking.
Mm-hmm.
The industry on, like, as an industry would say, this is not behavior they actually, at least publicly, encourage.
Yeah.
Right? We encourage, you know, drinking with thoughtfulness and, you know, thinking a lot about our consumption habits, et cetera, and taking a few days off or, you know, only having one or two, not every night, let's have a party.
Overconsumption.
And so, therefore, this correction is also happening. And it's actually overall good for alcohol use in America.
Yeah.
But that's going to mean that you're not going to see the same levels of people needing to buy, you know, restock.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going through a bottle of, you know, Hennessy a week. They're just not anymore. And they were during COVID, which is crazy to think.
Yeah.
That people were consuming that much, but they were. And so that, again, is all impacting. We're just going back to normal consumer behavior patterns. And I think, again, as an industry, we just need to all accept that together, because then I think we'll be in a much better place in terms of how we feel about how we're all doing.
Yeah. It's also interesting to think about how that time period kind of gave rise to this non-alcoholic segment.
Yeah.
Right? Like, now that's very popular and growing because of the behavioral changes that we're seeing post-pandemic.
Right. People got used to drinking something that tasted like alcohol, so now they want to keep doing that, but they also don't want to drink alcohol every day.
Right.
Adam, is your sense that these kind of false comparisons are endemic throughout all of, especially, like, kind of the consumer industry? Because I can think of so many other businesses and sectors that might be similarly affected. Is just everyone kind of like a chicken with their head cut off when it comes to this?
I think, except for the people that got fucked during COVID, right? So, like, the airline industry is like, whoa, it's great now.
Yeah.
But, I think if you look at anything that had to do with at-home living, right? So, you know, design, furniture, apparel. I mean, people bought so many shoes and, you know, shirts and shorts, like everything, because that's all you had. I think everyone is kind of seeing this consumer slowdown, which, again, it's like within why people started saying there was a recession coming and all this stuff, and we made these other false predictions. I think people are cooking less at home than they used to. There was a lot of people stocking up. There's a lot less stocking up happening now.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's everything. It's just that, you know, we're all in the bubble of alcohol, so this is all we hear. And this is why then we hear that, you know, there needs to be course correction. And look, I do think that because our industry was on fire during COVID, there was a lot of staffing up that now probably is being corrected back down.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happened in media. We saw same thing happened in lots of tech, right? Zoom hired as many people as they could during, you know, COVID because they were super busy.
Yeah,
they needed the help, and now they don't. Mm-hmm. So it's
so we're
back.
Seeing all these layoffs now, right. Which looks really bad, but that's also is very similar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for us, it's just especially when you hear it in relation to like, I hear people, tequila's fucked. It's not growing. And I actually think tequila is going to continue to grow. It's just not going to grow at the massive
double digit rate
that it was, especially on the super, super high luxury end. It's going to keep growing. And everyone instead is like, oh, nope, it's all about the low end now. No, I think it's going to be a mix. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think tequila will grow. It's just not going to grow at a massive rate. Same for whiskey. You know, I think there's going to always be an audience for wine. Is it going to be as big? No, because they're also what COVID did was expose a lot of consumers to the other worlds of alcohol mm-hmm. that they also decided they like. And cocktails really boomed during COVID because cocktails were a project, yeah. right? So we all learned projects, but like, so we gained an appreciation for cocktails. Now we like to have cocktails when we're out. So wine has a much stronger competitor than it probably did pre-COVID. But I don't think that means that wine is also fucked. I think that wine needs to make a lot of new decisions, which we've discussed, right? It needs to think about how it markets itself in a very different way. But I still think that like, we should recognize that it is here to stay, and there's a lot that there is growth there. It's just not going to be the massive growth that we're expecting.
Adam, I have one more question, I think in particular for you, but obviously Joanna, if you have thoughts on this too, please. I'm wondering, you know, you started out this kind of topic by talking about how a lot of this behavior is being driven by the big publicly traded companies.
Yep.
Do you think that there is some sort of inherent advantage in this landscape where those big publicly traded companies are being forced to sort of like at least posture like they're making big changes and perhaps like they're cutting staff, et cetera? Do you think there's an inherent advantage for the not publicly traded companies, the privately held companies that may say certain things, but aren't as beholden to keeping the stock price high as much as they are beholden to like maintaining profitability to resist some of this like panic?
I mean, I think this would be the time for them to spend, right? This would be the time for them while they're
while their
public competitors are publicly cutting budgets and pulling back and having less people on the street in the market and spending less on marketing, et cetera. This is the opportunity for the private companies to spend. You always hear about that, right? That like the companies that come out really strong are the ones that, you know, spend through things and really continue to push their products. And again, like I remember this from the conversation we had at the beginning of COVID with Stephanie. Like Gallo was bullish during the recession, and like you got to believe, you got to believe that High Noon and the strength of the entire company and where it is now is in a lot of ways, you know, a result of how bullish they were to continue to build the business even in a recession that then brought in more financial, you know, capital that then allowed them to continue to do things. I mean, they are private, right? I think
there's just so much risk associated with that, right?
Yes, and groupthink is groupthink, right? It's why we talk about this all the time, why so many tequila brands are just copying each other, because it's easier to copy than to try to do something completely different and take a huge risk. So if all you're reading in, you know, this is now super inside baseball, like in the Mark Brown email newsletter, mm-hmm. is that everyone is pulling back marketing budgets and cutting staff and lowering production and changing their goals, et cetera, you kind of feel the pressure to do that as well, as opposed to saying, no, we're going to be really, really, really bullish because this is the time when all of our competitors are not being that way. And look, in business, that's when you have the biggest opportunities, but it's also the scariest time to do that, right?
Yeah, well, in a way, as you mentioned before, with a generation of C-suite executives who, in some cases at least, maybe got lucky more than good to reach their current level, I imagine bucking trends is even more daunting a thought for them than for people who, you know, maybe are a little more established or, you know, kind of, if you believe in the meritocracy, reach that level more honestly. So, yeah, it's interesting dynamics for sure.
I mean, look, like in corporate America, for sure, right? If you are one of these executives, or even if you're not, and you make the decision to spend through this and continue to be bullish, and then you still don't have the numbers you said you would hit because of just the external factors that are happening right now that we've just discussed, you know, you could lose your job. Whereas like you could say by just being super cautious and still having the same horrible numbers this year, well, it happened to the entire industry and everyone was super cautious. So, you know, I didn't do anything that was different than everyone else.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. So like, we're really gonna let you go because they're not letting these people go. And I think that's, what a lot of people think about, you know, and which is why we wind up with industries, no matter what industry you're in, that kind of all behave the same. And that is where you then, the reason that every industry always has these like brands that come out of nowhere is because those are the brands that don't behave the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that is the huge opportunity in business always, is to be the brand that doesn't behave the same and think differently and continue to be, you know, really innovative and risk-taking, et cetera, and you come out ahead. But again, I think the reason I really wanted to have this conversation today was because I just, I all I've heard for the last few months is just this doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. And I just need everyone to reset here because it's actually not that bad.
People still like to drink.
Yeah.
It just takes a lot of, I feel like it, there just must be so much pressure and it must be very scary, right?
Totally.
For these companies, right? Because this is a very reasonable conversation that we're having. But again, if you have people who are only comparing to the past couple of years,
totally,
like they are unreasonable comps. And what are you supposed to do?
Exactly.
What can you do?
Nothing. That's the thing. It's like, but there was nothing we could do about COVID. And I think
having
this conversation around the anniversary of COVID is so important because, like, if we all can remember where we were 4 years ago, there was nothing any of us could do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot we all wanted to be able to. We wanted to stop it, right? We wanted to think that, like, if we stayed at home for 2 weeks, that was all we needed to stop the spread. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all the fucking graphs that were being posted. We just need 2 weeks. Stop the spread. Stop the spread. I'm like, that's this thing was out of control already, and like the economy is usually pretty out of control. Like, you, capitalism is the best, you know, economic model we have, but it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. And there's things that you can do to try to predict what's going to happen, and there's things that you can't do, right? I think a lot of people thought recently like Bitcoin was dead, and it's totally back.
Mm-hmm.
and stronger than ever, right? Like, no one knows why certain stocks go insane and others don't. Like, it just kind of is what it is. You got to ride the wave and make the smartest decisions you can and take the risks
that
you can
in
the moment. But yeah, I think in our lifetime we'll have another event like COVID? Who knows? That's the other thing. Or we'll have another event where we have this much consumption? Who knows?
Mm.
But it may not happen again. And we're just going to go back to normal consumer behaviors where we will have growth in certain areas and we will have contraction in certain areas. And it's going to be what it's going to be. But I think if you look at historical consumption data, as we discussed before, the same amount of the population basically for the last 100 years has consumed drinks.
Yeah.
And I also think when you talk about this like idea of a war on alcohol, again, if you look at our entire restaurant model in this country, unless we're talking about the fast casual Chipotles, and even they sell alcohol, the largest percentage of their profits comes from selling alcohol. These people weren't people that were out there, you know, for 50 years prior to us all realizing we need a cigarette ban, selling you cigarettes and making a huge percentage of their margins.
Mm.
But they are selling you alcohol. I don't think that's going to change. I think that people like to go out to drink. They like to have food. They like to have experiences in restaurants, and restaurants and bars make their money selling alcohol. So it's just a very different world. So comparing it to cigarettes or comparing it to weed, even, like, you go out and get fucking stoned with your friends? Oh, let's go to a weed bar. Like, no one does that. You go sit on your couch and watch, you know, The Simpsons or fucking Beavis and Butthead. I don't know.
Wow. What were those references?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm thinking about like dumb cartoons.
COVID comps. These are like, you know,
Adult Swim.
High school comps.
Adult Swim.
Oh,
you're
man.
Still dating yourself there, man.
No, I'm just thinking about like my average stoner
Beavis
person.
Butthead.
Beavis and Butthead.
Very good.
I think they're
good.
Back. I think they're back.
Okay.
You know, but that's what you're doing. You're like going, you're getting stoned and like eating popcorn.
Yeah,
I don't
get
know.
It. We get it. We get it.
Anyways, all that's to say, I think it's really interesting. Let us know what you think. If you've been looking at the data as well, hit us up at podcast@mindpair.com. If you have any other questions also, and I will talk to you both on Monday.
Have a nice weekend.
Sounds great.
Thanks so much for listening to the Vine Pair Podcast, the flagship podcast of the Vine Pair Podcast Network. If you love listening to this show, or even if you don't, but I really hope that you do, as much as we really do love making it, then please drop us a review or a rating wherever it is that you get your podcast, whether that be iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere. If you are listening to this on a device right now, through an app, however you got this audio, please drop a review. It really helps everyone else discover the show. And now for some totally awesome credits. So, The Vine Pair Podcast is recorded in our New York City headquarters and in Seattle, Washington, in Zach Jabal's basement. It is recorded by Zach, mastered and produced by Zach. He loves all the credit. Keep giving it to him. Drop his name in the reviews. He's going to love hearing how much you love him. It is also recorded in New York City by our tastings director, Keith Beavers, who is the managing director of the entire Vine Pair Podcast Network. I'd also love to give a shout out to our editor-in-chief, Joanna Sherino, who joins us on every single podcast as our third and most important host. Thank you as well to the entire Vine Pair staff and everyone who's been involved in making Vine Pair as special as it's become. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.